Good afternoon. We'll say evening and afternoon at the same time. If you'll go ahead, open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23. We're going to look through these a couple chapters of Matthew this evening. Today we're going to look at these particular chapters, and we're going to ask just some questions about them. And notice the text. A lot of folks think that everything in this passage, verse 34, 25, verse 46, is all surrounding the same event. They teach this doctrine. Actually, there's two doctrines that kind of arise when that comes about. But it's the belief that all of this happened when it's either going to happen or has already happened. In terms of the judgment day, they think that all of this is surrounding that. The religious world is two different groups of people. You have folks who say that all of this stuff in this section, Matthew chapter 23, verse 34 through 25, verse 46, that all of it has yet to be fulfilled. They teach this doctrine known as premillennialism, and we've talked about that in the past. They think that all these signs before the rapture happens, and a whole bunch of different stuff. Some people teach postmillennialism, which kind of differs just a little bit. And another doctrine, Matthew 23, verse 34, all the way to chapter 25, all of that has been fulfilled. So you got some folks who say that it's yet to be fulfilled. And you got other folks saying that it's already fulfilled, all of it. But the question of the matter is that true? Are either one telling the truth on this? Again, they get mixed up and they combine two things that are actually occurring in the text. And we're going to notice that this afternoon. We're going to look at two judgments of Christ. That's what's being discussed here in the text. And we're going to notice there's a distinction between a particular judgment that actually ends in chapter 24 and a different judgment that takes place later on. You see, in chapter 23, beginning in verse 34 and going through 24, verse 34, it talks about the judgment on Jerusalem. It's a prophecy of the things that were about to happen. If you haven't turned over there already, turn over there to Matthew chapter 23. One of the things he's been doing here in Matthew 23, as he has been preaching, is he has given this long list of very firm rebukes towards the scribes and Pharisees. He's been constantly calling them hypocrites over and over and over again. And so by the time of verse 34... now he finally says this: "Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, so that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, who you murdered between the temple and the altar. Truly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation." That's a key phrase to understand when you're reading through this text. All these things will take place in this generation. He's going to say that one other time in chapter 24. And as we're reading through this text, what we're seeing is they were going to reject Jesus and his messengers, just like their fathers did. That's what Jesus is addressing. I'm going to send you folks who are going to preach to you. They're going to try their best to try and bring you to obey the gospel, but you're just going to reject them. You're going to reject them, and by that time, you're going to be guilty of the very sins your father did. It continues on into verse 37. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, kills the prophets, stones those. How often I want to gather your..." her children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wing. In other words, Jesus said, I have been trying to save you over and over again, and you keep rejecting me. Christ is showing his desire to save the Jews living in Jerusalem. Some of you may remember our study in Romans. We came to Romans chapter 11, and it talked about how the Jews rejected Christ, and because of that, they were taken off the tree, which is supposed to represent God's people, and the branches were. But what he says, Paul talks about how Christ, and there was a desire for those Jews to be grafted back in, for them to be saved from their rejection of Christ. And so Jesus is trying to save them. He's trying to graft them back in the tree. He says, I'm going to send folks to you. You are just going to... Behold, your house is being left to you desolate. That would come upon you. For I say to you, from now on, you will not see me. Blessed is he. He's pointing out that God's presence is going to leave the temple. And once that happens, once God's presence has left the temple, all of Jerusalem, it was destroyed by the year. Pointing to. Come to chapter 24 now. The disciples have heard some of this. Or rather, they have heard this. It says in verse 24, verse 1, Jesus came out from the temple. So he's been telling this to everybody. He comes out of the temple now and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. He said to them, do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down. This is his declaration of how Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. It's a prophecy against Jerusalem. This is how his disciples responded to that. As he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came privately saying, tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age? If you pay attention to the words here, the disciples are asking questions about all this. But if you're paying attention, they're thinking all this is going to happen at the same time. But if you pay attention to how Jesus responds to this question, the end of the age, the destruction of Jerusalem and all of that, it's supposed to actually, he's going to answer it by showing that there's a difference. There's a difference between the two. There's going to be the destruction of the world. There's going to be that end of the world, the end of the age. And then, before that, though, there's going to be the destruction of Jerusalem. So he's going to be talking about this. And you see this phrase, signs of your coming. It's a kind of a metaphorical coming in this idea of he's going to come through the Roman armies to execute judgment on Jerusalem for their wickedness. And so again, the disciples are questioning Jesus about his words on this. They're trying to figure out what's going on here. What's going to be all the signs of this? They had three questions here. What's going to be, when are all these things going to happen? What is going to be the sign of your coming? And what's going to be the sign of the end of the age? And so they had those three questions here in this passage. And he's going to answer all three of them in turn. Again, he'll make that distinction between the judgment on Jerusalem and the judgment for all. And so as we continue on, first thing he brings up is the fact that there would be signs that the destruction of Jerusalem was approaching. Looking over and continuing in chapter 24 of Matthew in verse 4, it says, and Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. Excuse me. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, But that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pains. Let's just stop right there for a second. You notice he's saying that these things are just kind of starting up towards what's going to occur at Jerusalem. And it's all pointing to what would happen in 70 AD in Jerusalem. There, we're seeing just different things. He says there's going to be false Christs that come up. You know, we have false Christs today, but this isn't in reference to those. I ran across all kinds of people that claim to be Jesus. We ran across a person here in Olney that claimed to be Jesus. He claimed that he was Jesus. He was the reincarnated Christ, and he was separated from his real parents at birth, and just gave a whole kind of crazy story. But this isn't in reference to that. This is in reference to there being all these false Christs arising. It's just the beginning. You're not coming to that destruction of Jerusalem yet. But it's starting to head toward that direction. He brings up the fact that there was going to be wars and natural calamities. With the natural calamity specifically, he mentions famines. You may recall the famine in Acts. That caused them to try and get a contribution together, to try and really to assist the saints that would be in trouble because of this. And that would take place in the book of Acts. But again, that wasn't the end. The next sign he brings up begins in verse 9. He said, "Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another." You know, a lot of people, we've discussed this before, but people say it's impossible to fall away. Right here it says, before Jerusalem falls, there's going to be Christians falling away. The fact of the matter is, the Bible clearly teaches it's possible. Verse 11, "Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be saved." Before the destruction of Jerusalem, there was all kinds of stuff going on. You had the stoning of Stephen, which eventually led to Paul's big ravaging of the church. People may have thought, oh, is this the sign of the destruction of Jerusalem? No. It's leading up to it. This is the process that's taking place towards it. They were going to be preaching and trying to save folks, and this was just going to be the response to it, the response of them killing. You may recall when Paul had been converted, back, I think it was 50s AD, time-wise, but back when Paul was converted and he was the gospel for years, he was trying to bring salvation is coming to the Gentiles. Away with such a fellow! They tried to kill him. You also see the apostle being killed. He was dead. All of these things taking place, according to different stuff near the destruction of Jerusalem, alive to act as lamps for festivals he would throw. If I recall correctly, sometimes they would throw Christians into arenas and have them try to survive lions. I think some people, they may have had bears, but I'd have to double check on that. All kinds of stuff. Other apostles. this is the step that's got to happen, going to happen. He said this for verse 1. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world, all the nations. And then, spread the whole world, then the end world. The gospel has been preached to all the nations. Has it been preached to all the nations? Chapter 1, notice. Colossians chapter 1, verse 23, it says, if indeed you continue in the faith firmly established and steadfast, and not move away from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which was proclaimed in all creation under heaven, in which I, Paul, was made minister. Notice right there, Paul said, this is the gospel's been preached to every nation, preached to all creation. Jesus said, first it needs to be preached to all creation, it needs to be preached to all nations. And then the end shall come. And so by the time Paul writes Colossians, by the time Paul is penning this letter, again, is in these two judgments, there was teachings being addressed. What was to say is the death. Then the second one. Verse 15 through 18. Therefore, when you see the abomination, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains, wherever is on. Must not go down to get the things that are in his house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. If you have to continue on, he starts saying, but woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. But pray that your flock will not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. You see that phrase, though, there. But they were supposed to flee Jerusalem the moment, the abomination of desolation was seen. Some people ask, well, what does that mean, that word abomination? That word abomination actually means something stinks. We might say it today similarly, like the whiff of danger. But what was this abomination that was going to be seen? When was this abomination that they were supposed to see going to take place? What was it? Well, look over in chapter 21 of Luke. Chapter 21 of Luke, verse 20. He describes exactly what this abomination was going to be. Chapter 21, verse 20. Luke's account. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded armies, then recognize that your desolation is near. We go on from there to talk about fleeing to the mountains. Point. Excuse me. saw them, they needed to leave. Don't go back in the house and grab your coat. Try and move out last minute. But once that army surrounded you, they needed to get out of there. Don't go back in and get on the field. Get out of there. This was what Jesus was saying. This was a warning to try and save. Well, it was a warning to save disciples from this physical death, this great destruction that was about to come on Jerusalem. I want to give you an idea of the timeline of the prophecy's fulfillment. By the time Paul had wrote what he said in Colossians chapter 1, verse 23, many people say it was somewhere between 60 and 62 A.D. So allowing that as the most minimum amount of time, 62 A.D., would have been spread. Then, by 66, the first army was going to surround Cestius, if I'm Cestius Gallus. But it wasn't complete. They saw that army. That was their time. Once that came, once they saw that army, speculated that something happened. First attack happened on Jerusalem. It completely destroyed the city, but it did. The second army surrounded. The Cassian army went around 69 AD. The third army would come 70 AD. The times the Christians were supposed to be out of there. God gave them a 4 to 5 year heads up to get them out of there before the great destruction happens. Some people, like I said, they speculate that that there was some Christians in Jerusalem when it was attacked that first time in 66, but the ones that survived didn't manage to get out. Now, again, that's speculation on historians, but that's just. If you look at this and you see that, prophecy we're reading. It needs to be destruction. By the name of, he actually lived during the time. He didn't live during the time of. He wrote this after what was going on. He wrote the blood larger in quantity. They're using crossbows and they light the end on fire and send them out. Blood was marked to slay one number. These people had a G rejected Christ. These people have persecuted and were putting to death Christians. This is what happened. Account that God destroyed the another thing, there would have been a lot of days before Passover. I can be corrected on. Being able to discovered in the bodies of several people who've just been killed with the sword. That's the scene. Described. Was one of those sections. At a certain point, some people in Jerusalem had died of famine. There was a type of famine going on during the destruction of Jerusalem. I think it was, excuse me, during that. All these already dead from all persecuted. Verse 19. The woe to those pray. Will not be in the winter, or in the then they will be not heard in the until those days, no life. We're talking about unconditional. This is the Christians. Sake of will be cut short. In other words, this wasn't going to take a super long period of time. This wasn't going to go on and on and on. God was going to cut this short for the sake of his people. That is Christians. Verse 23. Then if anyone says to you, oh, here's the Christ. Or there he is, do not believe him. False Christ, false prophets will arise and will show great signs. Perhaps to mislead. All these signs. Christ is here. They're going to say, there's a prophet here. We're going to be saved. Don't worry. Jerusalem isn't going to be destroyed. Matter of fact, Josephus even mentions, he that false prophet, public proclamation that God commanded them to get up upon the temple. And there, they should receive miraculous sign. Get up on the temple. There's going to be signs shown. We're going to be delivered. Get on the temple. That's what this particular false prophet was saying. In the inner room. So will the coming of the Son of Man be? He's going to be coming with the Roman armies to destroy Jerusalem, and using the Roman army to accomplish his will, accomplish this punishment. Someone once wrote this book. I don't agree with it entirely, but wrote a particular commentary on Revelation. He did a good job, a lot of good stuff on it, but he says that Revelation was written before 70 AD. I don't agree with that. But he entitled his commentary on Revelation, "The Avenging of the Apostles and Prophets." That's what God does. He avenges his people. You remember the passage in Romans chapter 12 where he said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." God enacts vengeance on those who persecute his people. That's seen throughout the scriptures. That was particular vengeance in Revelation is going to be really directed toward those who would be living in 90 AD in that particular time period. This particular vengeance is taking place because of the Jewish persecution on Christians. So that's just something to make a note of. But if you continue on, it says, "For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be." Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. In other words, he can tell them, listen, there's going to be Christ saying, come over here, he's over here in secret, come over here. That's not going to be the case. Christ's coming in judgment on Jerusalem was going to be observed by all. It was not going to be some secret. When you see these particular, and I want to make this note real quick. When you see these particular words being the verbiage of sun, moon, and stars failing. It doesn't necessarily refer to the judgment. Babylon. When Babylon was destroyed, that was that. Not literally. This is prophetic. Isaiah 34, Nineveh was destroyed. And Ezekiel concerning Egypt. He's Isaiah concerning over and over again. It's just a proclamation of divine judgment on these particular nations. They're not literal sun, moon, and stars falling down on the earth, on the physical earth. All these things, verses 30, the destruction of Jerusalem would be fulfilled. Verse 30. Now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. In other words, listen, you start seeing the leaves start to blossom on that tree, that's a sign that, well, that's a sign that summer's coming. Because when this happens, that judgment on Jerusalem's about to happen. When all these signs occur, that judgment on Jerusalem's about to happen. Truly I say to you, this generation, verse 34, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. If what we've read so far is stuff that has yet to happen, I'd like to meet some people that are 2,000 years old. The truth is, there just aren't. These things have already been fulfilled. The Bible says all of this has been fulfilled. Then he starts on the judgment. He's talking about the judgment of all. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But on that day, but of that day, no one knows. That's the context. But of that day, the signs of the destruction, all of that's going to happen in your lifetime. But when heaven and earth pass away, when the end of the age comes, that's going to be something different. You're not going to be able to understand what came and took them. Referencing the destruction of Jerusalem, this is how you can see the distinction between the destruction of Jerusalem and the judgment on the world. Those days, plural, refers to the destruction of Jerusalem. Those days, the judgment day comes, those days, that day in heaven, change the subject, and you can kind of see the distinction. No sign. They just all of a sudden the flood took them. That's the way the judgment day is going to work. It's going to be a sudden separation of saints and sinners. Back there in verse 40 and 41, he says, listen, someone's going to be doing this. Two men are going to be doing this. All of a sudden, one's gone. Two women are going to be doing this. All of a sudden, one of them's gone. When judgment day comes, and it's time. Oh, it's judgment day. Time to obey the gospel. No, there's none of that. By the time that the trumpet sounds, according to what 1 Thessalonians tells us, then it's too late. You better be ready. Are you ready? We can be asking ourselves that every day. From there, these six verses we'll try to summarize in brief. We need to be ready for the judgment. That point is made clear through chapter 24, chapter 25. specifically these verses right here. Like a thief. Verses. Or you do not know which, but be sure of this. Signs of he does not give signs that he's what intelligent thief would do that? How would a thief leave signs of his coming? Does he pull up to the house and honk his horn at 3 a.m. at night? Does he start flashing his brights at the window? Does he knock on the door saying, "I'm coming in to rob you"? Does he come on in saying, "I'm going through your stuff"? A thief doesn't give signs. He doesn't give signs of his coming. That's the way the judgment day is going to be. Continue on from there. You can see the Lord is going to return as an unexpected master. He uses the analogy of one. He said the servant who the Lord finds doing what he's told him to do, he's going to be the one that's rewarded. Whereas the one that said, "Well, my master ain't coming back for a long time. I want to come back." And he starts disobeying his master's order, well, he ends up being punished. Chapter 25, verses 1 through 13, you read the parable of the bridegroom. He's going to return like a delayed bridegroom. Remember what happened there? You have the five foolish virgins and the five wise virgins. And what happened was some of them brought extra oil, some of them did not. And so they're sitting there by the gate. All of a sudden, here comes the bridegroom. Okay, oh no, I'm almost out of lamp oil. What do I do? Can you give me some of yours? No, I've got some. There's not enough for both of us. You got to go in the city. Go to the city. The bridegroom comes while they're away. They close the gate. They close the door. Those that were ready went in. The virgins that were ready, that were prepared for the delayed bridegroom were ready. The others come back. Let us in. I never knew you. Careful of the talents. We're given certain amounts of talents, and two of them came to him when he returned, gave back what he gave them with interest. The last one just said, "I buried it in the dirt." The point of that is, what are we doing with the gospel? Are we hiding it, or are we being good stewards of it? At this point, the Lord's going to return and punish those who do not serve him more. Right there in chapter 25, verses 31 to 36, the separation of the sheep and goats takes place. To those on his left, the goats, they enter into eternal destruction. But the sheep, the righteous, enter into eternal life. Why? This point, he's very I've been trying to save you. I'm going to continue to try to save you, but guess what? When this time comes, I'm done. I'm punished. God just has enough. He had enough. Why he sent an angel? Had enough with Israel. Throughout all the wicked people, slave that's not doing his master's will, he's punished. The slave that's not being a good steward, he's punished. The unprepared for the judgment day are punished. But at the same time, Jesus says, judge is a rewarder of his people. Back to that destruction of Jerusalem. Anybody who was a Christian living in Jerusalem, if they heeded the words of Christ, and they had the opportunity to get out of there, they could get out of Jerusalem 4 or 5 years before the whole destruction of Jerusalem took place. They were able to save their physical lives. He's also a rewarder of his people when it comes to blessed is that when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. He's a rewarder of people. He's a rewarder of those who do his. He rewards those that are. With that, we need to be order of the wicked, order of righteousness. What's going to become of us? Not ready for the power Christ has. He used the Roman army to accomplish his will in destroying Jerusalem. 1 million Jews died that day because of their rebellion toward Christ, their rebellion to God. He's big. He will punish people. But at the same time, he's willing to reward those who are faithful to him. Is that a description of us? Are we faithful to him? If you have never decided to put on Christ, if you've never decided to obey the gospel, I'll tell you exactly how you can become a Christian today. You can do so by believing in Jesus, repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in Christ, and being baptized. Perhaps you have done that, though. You realize that you're not living faithfully to God. You realize that maybe you will be thrown in with the wicked. Maybe you will be among those goats